This is another damn podcast about digital asset management. I'm Henrik de Geer. Today we're speaking with Jack van Antwerp. Jack, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing, Henrik?
Good. Jack, how are you involved with digital asset management?
Well, I'm the director of photography at the Wall Street Journal, and my involvement was to bring a digital asset management system to our workflow. Photography is a new thing for the journal, and it required us from the ground up starting a system that would allow the paper and online and other future things to find, sort, and deliver mostly photography for right now. We're also moving into some video and other kinds of things.
Awesome. And Jack, how have you increased user adoption of the DAM within your organization?
Well, I think it, in one respect, it's been self-activating. Mm-hmm. Because we had nothing and the previous method was pretty much going out and hunting and pecking for photographs on dozens of different websites mm-hmm. and photo services, mm-hmm. that when we had the model turned upside down and these photo services were pushing to us mm-hmm. The photos mm-hmm. and we were bringing them into the system, mm-hmm. it was such a leap forward in the ability to get things fast and to have them easily searchable. Mm-hmm. Really just, it became very fast. There were a few resistors, some people enjoy their own workflow, mm-hmm. But it was quite surprising that even just a few months afterwards, there were areas of it. We had a few kind of generic logons that mm-hmm. we'd had going for some people, and these logons got spread around. Mm-hmm. And I think when we were going from our test box to our final box, there was some planned outage, and I told the people that needed to know, but I didn't realize that the greater organization had really taken upon and using this thing in other parts of the world, actually. And we started getting these hysterical emails, like, what's going on with the system? And then we realized how wide it had been adopted and how fast it had been adopted.
So it was a positive, what's going on, rather than a, what's going on, why did you change my system?
Absolutely. No, yeah, we had yanked the candy bar out of the baby's hand, and people were quite upset. Mm-hmm. And just, us saying, hey, you're going to have to go back to the old way for just a very short amount of time. I don't even think it was a full day. Mm-hmm. People were very unhappy. And so, and we've been able to implement, I think, some workflows that really capitalize on the metadata mm-hmm. that come from the different agencies mm-hmm. that have made finding and sorting pictures in a very real-time way with breaking news even easier. Mm-hmm. We've tried to conform, just for, in some simple ways, we've tried to conform things like the word United States. Mm-hmm. If you've got eight different agencies, each one of them does it a different way. One says U.S., one says USA, one has the dots, one doesn't. And so we conformed all that mm-hmm. to just the word domestic. Mm-hmm. And just for the ability to then only look at domestic pictures mm-hmm. has been a huge leap forward. The ability to sort out sports photos, the ability to sort out entertainment photos, whittles down from what are thousands and thousands of pictures that one might have to wade through to get at that picture they're looking for, especially when you're just going through the wires to just try to find those best shots of the day. Mm-hmm. You can go from thousands and thousands of pictures to maybe only 1,500 or 2,000 that are relevant to you. If you're the domestic photo editor, or if you're the international photo editor, or you're the sports photo editor, you can then get to the a lot quicker, especially when you're having to browse. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't know what you're looking for. There's no search criteria that says good photo of the day.
True.
That's up to the editor's discretion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to clarify a point that you made earlier, when you meant you get pushed photos, you're talking about a stream of photography that comes from different wire services and other agencies. Is that correct?
Exactly. They send in to FTP, mm-hmm. and our asset management system picks it up, mm-hmm. conforms metadata, puts it into the system, categizes the high reses, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we have two interfaces. We have a thin client, mm-hmm. and we have a web application. And the thin client is fine when you're within, you know, a state or two of the server, but in our remote locations like London and Hong Kong, it just isn't reactive fast enough, and they use the web interface. And that's been a great little option to have.
Nice. And so it's used globally and adopted globally as well.
Yes, yes.
That's great.
And very much so.
Excellent.
And the power, we use a system called SCC, and they have a great feature where you are logons, and you can create user groups, et cetera, which has been instrumental for us because rights for photographs are very much dependent on where you are in the world. Mm-hmm. A certain agency might be subsold through a special agency in Japan that has only those rights. And even though we're buying directly from the mothership, that part of the world has a specific problem. And so we're able to have people, for instance, in Tokyo have their own logon group, which would exclude certain libraries or certain wire services that we don't have the right to publish in those countries. And that's been huge help with just saving money and also, you know, not creating problems with misuse of pictures, so to speak.
Right. That's a great example of rights management and use of groups and permissioning that you just described.
Yeah. Except when one of those users moves from one region to the other and doesn't tell us, which has happened. So we do need the feedback from the users to find out where they are in the world.
Right.
And as long as we've got that, we can work better with them.
That makes sense.
In the context also of figuring out, if you don't have a system already, what kind of system you need, I feel that they kind of fall into two categories. A black box, which is, you know, out of turnkey, out of the box, it's ready to go. And those are great because you can be up and running and ready to working fast. The downside is you work the way the system is made. A platform-based asset management system is certainly more complex, takes a lot longer to get going, but once you have it going the way you want it, you can continually sort of make tweaks and make changes that work for you. But neither, I would say, is the right way. It really depends on the resources you have and your how much skill you have or how much time you're willing to put into making the asset management system will work the way you want it to work, or whether you are able or willing to just kind of conform to the workflow it has built in.
Right. There is no one damn fits all solution out there.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, I think of, you know, the one we have and it has, how it has worked for us, which has been good. But there are instances where I see other ones that do certain things in a certain way that would be fantastic. There's a lot of features and a lot of different systems that are going to be right for whatever somebody's trying to do, video, photos, text, you know, a lot of different questions one has to ask.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's as described to me in the past, an onion with many, many layers that are interlinked and related.
Right. Exactly.
And Jack, what advice would you like to share with digital asset management professionals or people aspiring to be DAM professionals?
Wow. Well, I have become kind of a DAM professional, if I am one, by happenstance.
That's pretty common.
it was really shoved into the driver's seat because nobody had their hands on the wheels. But I guess my advice would be to really think what I would say backwards. Think from the usage and the user, the editor, whatever kind of, you know, whatever's happening in your organization, you know, the person who's touching the asset last. And then build and conceive your workflows from that place backwards. I think a lot of times we are immediately thinking of, oh, in my instance, you know, okay, here's the wire service, and we're worried about the intake of how it comes in, as opposed to, okay, let's start with the editor. What do they need? And then how can we affect that through what we're getting in? And that has, just the few things we've been able to do with massaging data and making it quick for editors to find exactly what they need has, A, made it fast adoption, and deep adoption. You know, people, you just do not take this away from me. It's now become a core part of our workflow. So, you know, really think about the user. Mm-hmm. And I find it interesting that a lot of times people will be like, oh, we've got 10 million assets or a billion assets or whatever. And mm-hmm. it's certainly important that a system is able to handle an infinite amount of records. You don't want to have it limited. But how many records you have is a little bit inconsequential to mm-hmm. finding the one record you need.
That's true.
And so, and it's hard to, you know, I guess, stand up and wave, you know, a flag of excitement for one record as opposed to having 100 million records. Mm-hmm. But really thinking about how can somebody find that one piece of information they're looking for, not, oh, we have a bazillion pieces of information. Mm-hmm. So thinking about, okay, what can we do to the metadata? How are people looking for things? What are they actually trying to find? Mm-hmm. And what can we do then within our keywording or our indexing, whatnot, to make that really efficient for people?
Right. That makes sense.
So that would be my advice.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Jack. For more on digital asset management, log on to anotherdamblog.com. Thanks again.